702.
The Aubrey Masango Show.
Live, online.
Smartphones, DSTV.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
We celebrate this evening the 2021 matric pass rate in the public sector, of course, at 76.4%, up 0.2% from 2020. And to discuss this, I'm joined by Musi Maimane, leader of the 1SA movement. Musi, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time, sir.
Yeah, good evening, and good evening to your fellow listeners.
And let's also welcome Ari Katz, a CEO at Boston City Campus. Ari, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
Good evening, Aubrey, and good evening to your listeners. Good evening, Musi.
Musi, let me start with you. Your thoughts about the matric pass rates this year, 76.4%. Your feelings, your thoughts?
Well, I think to me, it's the number of 76% is meaningless. It's meaningless from the perspective that it simply tells us that these are kids who, we know that many of their results are based on the 30% pass mark, and therefore, naturally, this is an inflated result. We are telling South Africans that of the kids who started grade one, this is only half who set for senior certificate, and more than anything, that in fact, as they are passing, there's a significant amount of them, it's only about 21% of them, who have actually achieved a bachelor's pass rate. So if you contrast that to the IEB exams, where they've got an 80% university pass rate, it tells you that in this country, we are still living in a country where if you've got access to money and access to quintile, to the higher quintile schools, you'll get a good education that will prepare you for university and you can proceed. But if you don't, you will be stuck with the Department of Basic Education's education system, which literally, as the results tonight will indicate, that the bachelor's passes are low, and ultimately the majority of those kids tomorrow, sadly, join the ranks of the unemployed. To me, I think it is a meaningless number. It really, in the context of our country, should not be something we should sit back and pat our back on until we truly interrogate the fact of what is the future prospect of those kids. Now, fair enough, you might be willing to go, well, it's an indicator of the fact that despite COVID, these young people set for exams. And I celebrate that and I applaud that. But sitting for an exam that ultimately the system has failed you for the past 11 years is a true injustice. And I think, you know, Jonathan Jansen said something that startled me and still does, saying that if the apartheid government was doing to young people what this government is doing to them today, we'd all be on the streets. But instead, we get to watch ANG tell us over 70% of them have passed, and these are the top ones, pulling them from the top 20% of the schooling system and saying this is what we should celebrate.
Let me invite parents, perhaps matriculants, people who wrote and sat for the exams last year, who have been listening to the results as they came through, read by the Minister of Basic Education in Njimo Tseka earlier today. What is it that you're celebrating? I mean, I'm sort of referring to what Musi has just said now. What exactly is it that you believe you are celebrating if indeed you did pass? What is the quality of the matric or the senior certificate that you have? I think a very, very important question raised there by Musi Maimane. But let me go straight to Ari Katz. Ari, you run a private institution. In fact, at the moment, you've just started a new school, a new online school, and it's a private institution selling education. In other words, you've basically commodified education, right? And it appears that only those that can afford commodified education are the ones, as Musi suggests, going to reap the best benefits of that kind of education versus the rest of the country. How do you respond?
So the initial response on the commodifying of it is that We believe that we're going to be democratizing quality education. We're providing a Cambridge education at approximately R2,500 a month, which we believe is extremely fair value for money. But I would like to just talk about the point that Musi was talking about in terms of the pass rate and what it means, et cetera. And I think on the one hand, I fully agree with Musi that I don't think the numbers, whether it be 76% or even 80% or 74% is relevant. From the point of view, the fact that the question really is what is the extent of the barometer of these results in the ability of the candidates to perform subsequent to their matric? And we know that those candidates who land up at university, the throughput rate is extremely low in the minimum time. We know that approximately 20-22% of learners manage to subsequently get through their degree in the minimum amount of time. So the question is, has the matric exam or the matric process really prepared me for tertiary education? Is it a reliable barometer of subsequent performance, either in tertiary education or in life in general? And if I talk about life in general, South Africa rated 63 out of 64 countries in the digital competitiveness survey. One of the key barometers behind that was, in fact, education. So we're definitely not performing at university level, not using our schooling to allow us to perform at university, and we're definitely not performing in the workplace, which is evident by the high unemployment rate as well as our rankings in the international survey. But I think when we look at the results, the one thing that's really important for me is the fact that only one out of four, approximately, matriculants get a pass in mathematics. And when we talk about a pass, we talk about 50%, which I do not believe is very aspirational, but that's besides the point. But only one out of four of these guys are going to get mathematics in matric. And bearing in mind, as Musi also pointed out, when the kids start in grade one, only half of them get to matric. So work out what percentage of our matriculants actually land up with a decent mathematics education. We're living in a knowledge economy. If you do not have subjects like maths and science, you will not be able to compete in life going forward, because your new competitor is not your neighbor. Your new competitor is some unknown guy in America or China or England. And so we need to become internationally competitive. And we need to have an exam system that's a reliable barometer of success. So on the one hand, yep, I applaud the matriculants because they pitched up, they did their best and in difficult circumstances with COVID. But that doesn't talk to our responsibility as a country and as educators.
Again, let me invite you to be part of this conversation as you listen to my conversation with Ari Katz and Musi Maimane, 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. As you hear all of these numbers being bandied about, the various districts that have done well or not so well, the various provinces that have done well, not so well, the youngsters that are on stage today where they are being congratulated for pitching up and writing, right? The administrators and all of those people. And I suppose at that level, indeed, we have to celebrate all of this. But when we come to the nub of it, when we really start to scratch below the surface, you tell me, yeah, please give me a call, 011-883-0702, what exactly we are celebrating. 021-446-0567, in terms of the quality of the matric, in terms of the future prospects of the matriculants themselves, in terms of the competitiveness of what they've been able to pass, globally speaking, as Ari Katz has just pointed out. Musi, I just want you to break down for me this notion of the 30% pass, because whenever I speak to people from the Department of Basic Education, I sort of get all sorts of very convoluted responses as to what exactly the 30% mark represents, or pass rate, pass mark represents. Sometimes I'm made to understand that 30% is not what the department is encouraging people to get to as a pass mark. That is a minimum pass mark, and that too is perhaps a suspect explanation. But explain to me, what are we saying to the nation here that a child is considered to have passed if they got 30% in this country for a subject? Aren't there any other nuances, any other issues that we should be understanding around the issue of the 30% pass mark?
Well, I think what they're trying to get at is if a child wants to study medicine, they don't need to pass all their subjects. They need some subjects to be passed at 40%, and they need some subjects to be passed at 30%, because you may not, for example, that's their most cogent argument, to say you don't need to pass everything to be able to be a doctor if that's what you're going to do. And I'm arguing the case that is absolute nonsense. It's offensive to the people of this country and offensive to young people, because ultimately, let me make a few points that I think to me I want to anchor this conversation on. Firstly, I don't think there's anything wrong with our children. I think the education system is failing them by asking them to say certain subjects you can pass at 30%. And then when they announce these results tonight, they are basing it on the fact that there are a lot of learners that have passed at 30%. So our fellow panelist says it correctly, that in fact, if you look at how many young people pass mathematics at 50%, that number drops significantly. Actually, that number is at 23% last year. I'll do the analysis of the ones they've just tabled now in 2021. But in 2020, only 23% of the kids in this country passed mathematics at 50%. The rest passed below 50%. So when you are saying to people, this is an indicator of your education system, we are never going to be globally competitive. We are failing our young people. And that's why in the interventions that we tabled, we said we need to be conscious of starting at primary school. If a child does not believe they can do mathematics at primary school and does not get the right foundations, if you do not fix it there, you are never going to correct it in matric unless you start again. So, frankly, we failed our primary school. Our kids cannot read for meaning. They don't do literacy for meaning by the time they get there. And so we have to obsess about saying we must gradually increase the percentage from 30% all the way up to 50% and do it by 5% increment year on year so that the system can adjust. And everywhere we put a teacher assistant, they must be targeting STEM subjects. So if one day when we talk about a maths pass, it's not a 30% mark pass for 70% of the students. It's actually a meaningful 50%, because actually, even though they may not use that maths, all it simply indicates is that they've got proficiency and competence to be able to further their studies and to be competitive in other sectors. And I just feel this education system is failing them. So in some ways, watching, we must celebrate our kids. Every parent who's got their child today who's got a senior certificate must delight. But here's what is sad, is that it only represents the top 20% of the schools in this country. As for the rest, they have a matric in many ways that's not meaningful.
Oh, by the way, some breaking news, folks, on 011-883-0702. Tourism Minister Lindiwe Sisulu denies claims she's apologized for her attack on the judiciary. Sisulu says she categorically disowns presidency statement saying she's apologized. Interesting. Maybe you want to weigh in on that very quickly, Muzi?
Yeah, look, firstly, I think I'm grateful that the minister and the presidency met. It's nearly 2 weeks too late for an opinion piece that was penned 2 weeks ago. And I certainly think that more than anything, this has become a political fight between two candidates. And if the president wants to defend the judiciary and one of his ministers wants to conduct themselves like that, then it's up to the president to dismiss the minister. But I'm not here to defend or comment on the nature of the opinion piece. Where I disagree is that the judiciary must enter into this fray. Because if Judge Zondo enters into this particular space, then ultimately what it will mean is that he must also then have right of reply, and then our judges become political players rather than, in fact, people who issue judgments that we can sit back as South Africans and know that they are impartial, not respect of people, but respect of law. So to me, I think that it's up to the presidency now. If I was in his shoes and a minister was certainly going out to disregard a view in that nature, he has all the powers given to him in the Constitution to dismiss Minister Sisulu.
011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. That's not the conversation at hand at the moment. I've just seen the breaking news come through about the fact that the Minister of Tourism, Minister Lindiwe Sisulu, denies claims that she's apologized for attack on the judiciary. Sisulu says she categorically disowns presidency's statement saying she's apologized. It's not the conversation. We'll open up the lines for you to participate in that conversation perhaps later on in the show, but I just thought while I have Musi Maimane here, let me ask him his thoughts about that. But let's go back to the conversation around the results that we've heard about today or to this evening from the Department of Basic Education. Ari Katz, the fact that we have this idea of a 30% pass mark and all of the issues that both you and Musi Maimane have raised around the quality of the matric brings me to the question where I am a little worried also about the fact that we tend to fixate so much on matric rather than all of the formative years, all of the years that build up to matric. It's almost as if our focus is just about matric, when I would argue that in fact the matric year needs to be about all of the things that have been done throughout the career of a child to matric, rather than just the matric itself. So I suppose the question I'm asking is there perhaps too much of a fixation on matric? And what is the result of that?
So I think you're raising an excellent point. And in fact, one of the things that we particularly value is the issue of reliability factor of the questions and of the exams and of the process. And we all know if it's about how you ask the question. And so what Cambridge produced at much lower levels, level 7, level 8, level 9, as you go along, they produce a set of diagnostics and progression tests where you can actually evaluate where you stand relative to everybody else in the world in the Cambridge system. So I'm not measuring myself, number one, against my neighbor, but I'm able to see that my child is in, call it grade 7 at the moment, in mathematics. This is where he stands. He's the gold, the bronze, the silver, and this is where he's relative to the rest of the world. And these tests have been scientifically designed to indicate reliability. And then they also tell you exactly which areas you're actually weak. Now, why do I raise that? Because exactly what you were saying there, one of the reasons that we have such poor results in mathematics and matric is because I believe that we have failed to educate at the foundation skills level. And very often, kids get pushed through the system either because, well, they're old enough now, so push them to the next grade, or the tests that are set are not reliable. And therefore, they get pushed through the system and they have massive gaps in their knowledge. We know from within our own organization that kids who can come to us sometimes with 80% for mathematics, but when we put them through the diagnostic and our progression tests, the Cambridge system, they perform very poorly, and we advise them to start going back a step or doing bridging programs, etc. And so I think we need to examine the reliability of the teaching and learning, and most importantly, the reliability of the assessment process from grade 1 all the way up. Because particularly in subjects where you need foundation skills, if you don't build on those foundation skills and you land up with gaps in the knowledge, it's tantamount to building a building without a foundation. And so one of the things that I would invite, and we're happy to invite CAPS students to come and do it as well, just to do the online progression test at grade 7, grade 8, grade 9, and see where you stand relative to not your peers in your class, but relative to where you stand relative to your peers internationally, and see, am I going to be able to compete? Does my 80% in mathematics in grade 7 mean that I'm really worth 80%, number one? And number two, are there gaps in my knowledge, and where are those gaps?
Somebody asks the question, Ari, says, you mentioned that the matric is not a reliable indicator of success. How do we know that Cambridge is a reliable predictor of success? That's one question to you. And another comes to you and says, can you use Cambridge for South African universities, or is it limiting yourself to studying overseas? Is the question, Ari?
Okay, so both are good questions that I'll deal with each of them. So let's just talk about the reliability. There's a study that was actually done, I think it was done by Cambridge, I'm not sure, I might stand to be corrected, where they calculated the correlation coefficient, i.e. the reliability factor, between Cambridge IGCSE. That's equivalent, I'd say, of around grade 10, 11. So not even matric, okay? AS level is more matric standard. But they calculated the correlation coefficient between your results in IGCSE and your results in a number of other international tests, things like the SATs, the ACTs, and also then measured the reliability to in university success. And they printed it out relative to every single subject. And I can tell you that on average, there was a greater than 76% reliability of your performance in IGCSE relative to how you would perform in either the SATs or the ACTs or at first year university. And so that tells me objectively that there is an international study across the board that shows you that the Cambridge exams are a reliable predictor of your success academically in many institutions. That's number one. In terms of ability to get into university, yes, you can. If you do, there are different rules around it, but in broad terms, if you do four AS levels and one IGCSE, or four or five ASs, they're acceptable through an agreement between Cambridge and USAF. You can get into a South African university.
All right.
Into any university around the world, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Musi, let me ask you this question. Oh, it's a question coming from a listener on Twitter. It says, no, Musi doesn't really know what he's talking about. No university will accept a child for medicine or any other degree with a 30% on some subject. This instead means of failing you because you got 30% in your subjects. We want you to walk away with some certificate. I'm not really sure I'm getting at Mulan 100%. Maybe you could give me a call just to clarify there. But Musi, what do you make of that comment?
Yeah, look, I never said that that a university will accept a child. Of course, anyone who says, who shows in their report that there's a subject that they've passed at 30%, believe you me, they don't qualify for bursaries, they don't qualify for university entrance. And what in fact happens is that that is the point that we are trying to make, is that the Department of Basic Education says that child can move ahead, but actually they can't get anywhere beyond that point because they've passed certain subjects at 30% and others at 40%, and they would have deemed to have been passed. But frankly, they can't graduate to higher education. And when they go look for workplaces, those young people are failed. So that is the point. So I think the caller is correct. I never said they certainly would qualify for university. I simply said that they keep the 30% pass rate because they want to maintain the argument that you don't need all the subjects for particular careers.
Part of the problem, says another listener, is that we instill into children that mediocrity is okay. They get told stupid things like it's okay if you don't come first and get awards for just showing up. In life, unfortunately, there are winners and losers. And this mentality of well done for participating is part of the problem. What do you make of that, Musi?
You know, Aubrey, my call, and I want to make this particular point, is that nations succeed because they ask more of their citizens. They invite them to greatness. If you are sitting with a Japanese Minister of Education today, they would tell you that we're going to be exporters of robotics and our young people are going to be the best in robotics all over the world. If you're sitting with the Minister of Education in Kenya, they have a perspective about what kind of economy they want to build, and they call greatness out of their nation. Our country, we had an apartheid system that said black kids will only end up as farmers. Now we have a government that's telling us that kids are going to end up unemployed. That, the 30%, is a mere confirmation of that state of play. And unless we get a leadership in this country that is believing, really, that our country can thrive, it can be competitive in the following areas, and to achieve that, we need to pull our education up by its bootstraps and make sure everybody is passing at a much higher level, competent. We will never fix the situation. And so to me, like I said earlier, the fault is not with our kids. The fault is the fact that we have a leadership crisis and a government that doesn't believe greatness out of those kids. If you are speaking to Jewish schools will tell you straight up that, in fact, they want better of their kids. None of them would accept that you could pass any subject at 30%. Why are we asking our children to do that? My kids are in the education system. I would never accept it that they would pass at 30%. Yet, it's okay that this government wants to tell our kids that that's the case. So, to me, Aubrey, as passionate as I feel about this education, I want to invite more people, more parents, because actually the parents are telling us in South Africa that they are unhappy. That's why if you stand in any motorway coming out of the township, even the children teachers who are, they teach in township schools, but they send their kids elsewhere because they know that what happens in those schools is not good enough. Why is it that in the Eastern Cape we're still talking about pet latrines? It is an injustice that is taking place in our country. And I've said it on many platforms, and I'll say it again, that if people like Steve Biko, who fought hard for education, would look at this system, they would tell kids in this country that they are still on their own.
Let's talk a little bit about curriculum. I mean, Ari Katz represents, in his conversation, the idea of a different curriculum, and he's an advocate for the Cambridge curriculum. Our public school system is under the CAPS curriculum. To what extent is that sort of space, from your perspective, Musi, something that needs transformation, change? Do we need a curriculum change? Is that in any way something that needs to be looked at? Musi?
I apologize. The question that you phrased, re-curriculum, I do think this issue of curriculum is vital. I've already stated on record to say life orientation needs to be reviewed. I also think that we need to focus strongly on STEM subjects. We need to introduce subjects like robotics so that we can really prepare for the fourth industrial revolution. So to me, curriculum must be linked to your economic outputs and future prospects. If you don't, if you view your curriculum from the lens of just simply saying you are preparing for the second industrial revolution, which is simply that our children will become factory workers, you are going to educate them like that, and you are going to set up your education system like that. Whereas if you genuinely believe that there's an economy that is going in the future, you will review your curriculum. But also, curriculum is based on values. And it gives expression of values. And so I certainly think that part of the values prism that we've got to look at when we're having conversations about to decolonize the education, etc., that in the curriculum sector, we need to give expression of the values of Ubuntu and be able to say to the government, to the people of this country, that through our education system, we must give those values life and give them expression in our curriculum so that ultimately someone who's come through that African education system can be able to say, this is my gift to the world. All education systems have a view, and the Nordic countries have a view, the Asian countries have a view, have a philosophical point of departure. We must imprint what is inherently ours so that young people have a sense of self in their confidence and have a sense of who they are in relation to the world. And I think this is a powerful opportunity to be able to review curriculum in that light. The department has been stating for years that they're looking at curriculum review, but really minimum work has been done.
Ari, let me go into the question again around curriculum. You guys are proponents, for example, of the Cambridge curriculum. Based on what Musi is saying, that a curriculum has to reflect the values of that specific country on the basis of the needs of that specific country. Given the fact that Cambridge is not a South African curriculum, and yes, maybe it does expose children to, I suppose, higher order thinking, as I've heard you say in the past, and all of those kinds of things. But what of the customization of a curriculum for South Africa, for South African needs? Is this not just another cutting and pasting exercise that will suit you as a business, but not necessarily the country? Talk to me about that.
So I think there are a couple of answers to your question, and I don't think there's ever an ideal situation, but let me try and address what you're speaking about. So first of all, we wanted a curriculum. We wanted a system that we felt would be a reliable system with a very strong back office support infrastructure. That was number one. Number two, as Musi said, we need to be educating for the fourth industrial revolution. But the problem with educating for the fourth industrial revolution is this, that the information that you learn today is going to be out of date by the time you enter the workforce. And it's probably going to be out of date in a year or two's time. So the question is, how do I teach such that I equip you to be able to cope with a system where the information is going to be out of date before you even hit the ground? And the answer to that is that I need to equip our learners to be able to think out of the box. They need to be able to critically evaluate what they're learning. They need to be able to research. They need to analyze, understand, etc. If you develop those skills, then you become an individual that can deal with change and you can deal with the fourth industrial revolution. So that's first up. And that was one of the main reasons we went for the Cambridge curriculum, because we found it was a great support hub at the back. As I said, that we have diagnostics over there where we can evaluate exactly, and Musi spoke about the STEM subjects, where our learners hold relative to the rest of the world. And we have a system where we teach people to think and critically evaluate and analyze. So the question really is, how did you relate that to an African culture and a South African culture? So one of the things that we've done, we've introduced a debating software, because we're an online school, into our curriculum. And our learners will debate, are going to debate online with other learners from other schools and other cultures. They will debate issues related to themselves and their country. So the one big debate that we've got going at the moment, and we've got a whole program going between now and June, and then in June we're going to debate it internationally. And the question we're really asking the learners to debate is whether they believe their education system is gearing them up for the future, and are they prepared for life? So what does that achieve? It allows them to debate. They learn to analyze, to critically evaluate, to argue, etc. And we're going to have them debate amongst different schools and different cultures, etc., within South Africa. We've then got a program for them to do it in Africa. And then in June, we're going to do it between South Africa and the US, UK, and other countries. So it allows them to explore, evaluate, research, etc. And hopefully through that process, they can develop the skills to actually find solutions to the problems in South Africa.
011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. Let me invite your contributions to the conversation. We've been discussing the latest basic education matric results. And the question I'm asking is, what are we celebrating, actually? Sure, we have to be mindful of the fact that the last 2 years have been very, very difficult. And just the showing up of everybody concerned, from administrators to teachers to the children themselves, is in and of itself an achievement. But after that is said and done, there's the real issue of life and the demands of it. Have we prepared our kids for it? Yeah. Have we connected what they're learning to the demands of the commercial world out there? What is it that the Department of Education is providing us long term? Yeah. And are we in a position where we can say that we are going to produce global players in all the endeavors of life that require education. Some messages coming through the WhatsApp line. Hi, Aubrey and your guests. In the real world, it's hard, says this person. We're sitting with our kids who passed at university as engineers, and they are unemployed. Sadly, this group is only going to join the queuing of opportunities. So I want to take some calls from our listeners. Professor Carol Dean is on the line. Prof, thank you so much for joining us. Your thoughts?
Hi, it's Prof Carol Dean. So I am a breast cancer surgeon. How's it, Aubrey?
Yeah, how are you doing, Prof?
Good, but I can tell you, amazing, amazing show. So my comments are, the starting block is we've got to change how we educate. I think there are basic building blocks that we all need to be able to do, and maybe that is R to standard 5, whatever grade 7 is. But I think the problem comes in as we go into high school. We need to understand that we might not have equal talent, but we're all equal. And I think what we don't teach our children and we don't teach ourselves is that whether you're a plumber or a cleaner or that you are equal. So equal contributing to making sure our South African society works. Because then you need to start looking at people and saying, what are your talents and what are your interests? Not everyone needs to do engineering or medicine, etc., but whether you are or pairing or helping or the guy I'm looking here, I call it African, when they walk and they clean up all the rubbish, etc. It's our form of recycling, which is amazing. You have an equal contribution to this country. We've got to change our high school education and then our what goes on further in terms of people. But it really resonates with what everyone said. Because we have a responsibility to mentor and help so that we can improve everything. So we have to change our education system. This concept of 30% is nonsense. But maybe we are teaching the wrong thing, maybe we're examining the wrong things, and maybe we're expecting the wrong things.
In your experience, Prof, I mean, what's the rationale behind this 30% notion? Surely there is some sort of rationale from where you stand. I mean, you're an educationist yourself.
Yeah, what is
the rationale? Whether one agrees with it or not is immaterial for me at the moment. But what's the thinking behind it?
So I don't think there is a thinking behind it. The thinking behind it is literally about, have you dotted the I's and crossed the T's in the lowest level possible so we can get you out of system to move someone on to the next system? So it's completely non-functional. And maybe the issue is not around marks and percentage. The issue is around competency and competency skills. So it might be that people can never, ever do maths and maths higher grade or geography up T's. I'm absolutely useless. I can get lost anyway. But it's about honing your skills so that as you go through the high school system, you start finding your direction, whether you should be a soccer player who understands how to do your accounts and manage your things, or whether you need to do technical skills and plumbing. Or because if you can start making people realize that their equality is based on their ability to do whatever, you fix this concept of, well, I'm a professor of surgery and therefore I'm a this, and you're a teacher and therefore you're that. So my nurses and porters in my hospital units are equally important to the success of my unit. My breast clinic today, 210 patients in government. Kudos to my front desk people who administrate because they were the heroes. So that is what we need to change so that everybody is functioning and we have a functional society. So I don't think the 30% is a joke, okay? It's a complete joke, and it achieves nothing. The kids understand that, and the teachers understand it, but all we're doing is we're rushing people through a system. Instead of changing systems and developing this concept of we all have a way to contribute, let's work out what our best talents are and start honing those talents at a high school level.
Prof, thank you so much for your contribution. Simon is in Johannesburg. Simon, you're a principal, right, at a school. Your thoughts?
Hi, good day, Aubrey. Thanks for the conversation and so forth.
Robbie, one thing that we have to do as a country, we really have to wake up. You know, the world is changing at a fast, rapid rate, much more faster than the education policy of our strategists and so forth. The wheels of education in South Africa is changing very slow, right? We have to realize that the industry that created jobs in the past were the mining industry. Those are dead industries. We have to look into the future. And how do we make education relevant? Unless education is relevant, then children are going to school to be unemployed and to be poor. So what do I mean by that? We have to look into what does our economy need, what are the challenges, and we have to very quickly align the needs of the economy, our education system, with the needs of the economy. Because at this point in time, our economy is going north. It requires and demands X, Y, Z in terms of innovation, in terms of various different other industries, in terms of technology. But our education system is going south, and you have this massive gap. Now, the fundamental question is, how do we shorten that gap, and how do we intervene? And unfortunately, I do not believe that it's only the curriculum system that educates the children. What are we doing as an example of the country in terms of the next goal in South Africa, the industry, is the tourism sector. There's massive opportunity for the tourism sector. Massive opportunity in terms of entrepreneurship. The area that has the highest potential for job creation, opportunity creation, and innovation, which is entrepreneurship, is not getting the same amount of ventilation in this country. And I find it extremely absurd that the area, people that can create jobs, we are not creating the next generation of entrepreneurs. The entrepreneurs are getting older, they're leaving the country, and yet we expect people to have jobs. You can have whatever curriculum system you want in the country. As long as you do not create a job and wealth creators, you will have the same problem and you have the same conversation in the next 10 years.
Simon,
so we have to be very thoughtful of what do we do and how do we get away from the process of whether we engage in this fraud of educating children to be unemployed. We simply have to stop and provide them with relevant education that will empower them so that they can have meaningful economic citizens of the country and a better quality of life. Because at the end of the day, whether you have a child in grade one, he will become an adult. And you don't want that child to be unemployed and have a bad life into the future. That is what we have to do.
Simon,
we have to look at issues of... Yes?
Let me thank you very much. As I close, we've run out of time, but thank you so much for your contribution. Musi, your final word. We were having a conversation the other day about the dropout rate, for example. It's estimated that up to 700,000 children have dropped out of the schooling system in total. Yeah. What interventions do you think need to now go into place? You've heard Professor Carol Benn. You've heard Simon, who is a principal at a school himself, suggesting that the system, the education system, is not in any way aligned to the commercial world. And we hear it all the time. I mean, there was a message that came through that says that children are passing tests at universities and getting certain qualifications, but they are not finding employment. What interventions, what changes need to go into our education system in 30 seconds?
To me, I think, you know, the first and most crucial thing is that we need to get a Minister of Education who, in fact, is not loyal to the party or any of that, but is focused on the investment into the country. And there is a constitutional provision that allows the president to be able to appoint three individuals outside the parliamentary list. I would argue the case that any self-respecting president would think to themselves, if I do the same for them for finance, where the president doesn't need to be political, I could do the same in education. And the fundamental reason I say that is because where our education system sits at the moment is that it's captured by unions. It is in a system is broken in that it just is a conveyor belt that gets kids through at whatever cost or at 30% cost. So now what we've got to do is appoint the appropriate leadership, create the economic vision that says this is what South Africa and the Fourth Industrial Revolution is going to do. and then create a skills pipeline, both academically in terms of what happens at university and how kids get to university, and both at vocational training in terms of what skills we need to train.
Musi Maimane, let me stop you there.
Do those things.
Let me stop you there, sir. I'm so sorry. Thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate your time. Musi Maimane, leader of One SA Movement. Ari Katz, 30 seconds for you. How do we make sure that our education system in this country functions in the way that many of the speakers and the listeners are talking about? But what is the one function, what is the one intervention that we could put in place to give us hope for a better day?
So I think Professor Ben summarized it beautifully when she said about cognitive skills and competency. And I think that what we need, which we've seen that the Cambridge system provides us for our learners, is reliable barometers of measurement of success.
Arikets.
And to be able to identify reliably whether your learners are capable of passing to the next grade.
Let me thank you so much for joining us. Arikets, CEO of Boston City Campus.